Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Storytime Stories when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Now, our traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We're taught to covet our neighbor's property and then call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes. We've been taught to practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods called government. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We now pay up to 75% of everything we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four in America has an average $70,000 consumer debt. We Americans now owe more than $12 trillion in our national debt. We are now surety for another $100 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions are leveraged out to $100 trillion worldwide. Our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. And you and I live from paycheck to paycheck. And we've been taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of creation gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way of life. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order our 4-hour compact disc package? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about stories. Stories. These are real live life experiences that people that have gone to law school here or I have personally experienced. And from time to time, when we're sitting here in class and we're jawboning a little bit and somebody says, well, Mr. Gordon, what happened when thus and so occurred? Or what did you do next? Or what happened? Tell us that story. Well, when you get to be old and full of years, you're full of a lot of stories. A lot of things have happened. A lot of water's gone under the bridge. If I knew at age 17 what I know now, I would have lived my life totally differently from the way I lived my life. I could have avoided all of those reinventions of the wheel, all of those mistakes that people make in their lives, because they're experimenting. After all, they don't know. Should I experiment with crack cocaine and marijuana? Should I join the drug scene? Should I go to Flo's Whorehouse? Should I join the Army, Navy, or Marines? You know, after you get out of the Army, the Navy, or Marines, I've been asking you veterans out there for the last 30 or 40 years, would you do that again? I have yet to talk to one veteran who would say to me, yes, I would join the Army again. I have never talked to a man. I got a man who's working here right now. He was in the Marines. He joined, did a hitch in the Marines, and then he got out of the Marines. He went and joined a hitch and did one in the Army. I said, J.W., would you do that again? He said, God, no. No, I would not do that again. See, now, when you get to be 40 years old, and you look back, you know, when you were 18 or 20, and, you know, when you were 18 or 20, it made a lot of sense to join the Air Force, didn't it? When you get to be 40, you look back and say, what in the hell was I thinking of when I did that? So, mistakes are made, and we learn from our mistakes. Now, I'm sure a lot of people out there would write me a letter and say, hey, I joined the Army, I was proud of my service, I would do it again. There's probably a couple of you out there. But I got to tell you that the majority that I've talked to, in fact, I've yet to talk to a man that would say, yes, I would join again. I guess if we had a man that would join again, he would have stayed in for 30 years and retired there. Now, my brother-in-law, he was in the Air Force, I think, for 20 years at least, and he might have been in there for 30. I never did ask Johnny, would you do that again, or did you like your military career? I think maybe that might be an exception. Well, John, he might have said, well, yeah, I did it for 30 years. Would I do it again? I don't know. I should ask him. Now, from time to time, when people ask me, hey, Gordon, we just did two programs here, back to back here, and we were talking about this thing of the IRS summons and subpoena. And I said to you, well, I used to have all of those things. I had safe deposit boxes and credit cards, and I had records and books and time cards, and I had employees. I've had all that. I understand how that works. But now I can say, after having experienced that, after having run the Atlantis Company and been in the contracting business for many years, I wouldn't do that again. You know, if I had that to do over again, I wouldn't do it. I don't say that I'm sorry that I learned from those bitter experiences. You know, when the IRS came in and did this audit on me, I don't regret that. It was a valuable experience. I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but it was a valuable experience. I ran an airplane through a fence one time. A valuable experience. I wouldn't want to do it again, and I wouldn't suggest that you do it. I lucked out. I didn't get killed, but generally speaking, when you crash an airplane, you don't walk away, you get killed. That's the general rule of thumb. If you can crash an airplane, walk away from it, and then say, I wrecked an airplane and I didn't get killed, that's unusual. It happens once in a while, but not often, generally speaking. Now, I'm going to give you another lesson here in this thing of citizenship. Oftentimes, people will talk to me about citizenship, and they're proud of their citizenship. They'll say, I'm a citizen of the state of Oregon. I'm not a citizen of the United States of America. I'm not this kind of a citizen or that kind of a citizen or, you know, something else. And I'm sure these people mean well, and I'm sure that they're sincere, and I'm sure that they're honest, straightforward people. But I oftentimes wonder, do these people really know what they're talking about? Do they really understand what citizenship is? Well, let me just give you a couple of ideas here that maybe you'd never thought of before. I just pulled this out of American Jurisprudence on Citizenship, Section 115. I just walked over here to the Encyclopedia of Law called American Jurisprudence, looked up C for citizenship, just like you would with the Encyclopedia Britannica. And then if you ever go into litigation and you find yourself in court, if you cite from Amjur or Corpus Juris or Corpus Juris Secundum or words and phrases, the judge will listen to you. If you start spouting off about your ideas concerning citizenship, you're going to lose the judge in short order. And then he's not going to pay very much attention to you. And a lot of times people complain about that. They say the judge wouldn't listen to me. And judges are that way. I got to tell you that they are. It's been my experience. Judges don't want to listen to a lot of nonsense and foolishness. The law is already very well settled. When people come into class, sometimes they'll tell me, well, the income tax is unconstitutional. Walk into court and tell a judge that the income tax is unconstitutional, and you're going to lose that guy right away because he not only doesn't believe it, the law is very well settled that the income tax is constitutional. Now, I know there's a lot of you people out there that don't believe that, but I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right. I'm just here to tell you that that's the way the game's being played. And if you want to play the game, then let's get in line. And if you don't want to play the game, then, you know, it takes your chances. Now listen to this. Citizenship. Generally, in definitions and attributes. In general, membership in a political society is called citizenship. And it implies a duty of allegiance on the part of the member and a duty of protection on the part of the society. So when you're talking about citizenship, what you're really dealing with here is a membership in a political society. So if you want to be a member of a political society, citizenship is what you need. I don't deny it. But I looked at that some years ago and I asked myself this question, do I really need membership in a political society? What are the benefits? What does little Georgie Gordon get from being a member of a political society? Is there something that I'm going to get? Is somebody going to put $1,000 in my checking account? Is somebody going to send me a new Lexus automobile? Is there some benefit? Am I going to live to be 110 years old as a citizen versus a non-citizen? Does it give me a long life? Does it give me better health? Now, going on, it says, these are reciprocal obligations, one being a compensation for the other. Now, I want you to notice here, it implies a duty of allegiance on the part of the member. So I owe this political society my allegiance, my worship, my obedience. So, it makes all the sense in the world. If you want to join this club or organization, you know, gang members do this all the time. They will join some gang, and then they got to have a tattoo put on their arm to identify the gang they belong to. Then there's certain things and standards of conduct that are expected by this group, this gang, this club, this member, as in a relationship with the rest of the society. See? You do this when you join a church. You know, you want to join the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and all of a sudden they expect you to go to church on Saturday. You've been going to church all your life on Sunday, and all of a sudden these fools want you to go to church on Saturday. Busiest commercial day of the week. Are you really sure that you want to join the Adventists? Maybe the Scientologists would be a better membership in a political or religious society for you. Think about it. I'm not here trying to sell you one or the other. Just let's start thinking about why do we want to belong to any of them? What does it do for you? The term citizen refers to a constituent member of a body politic owing allegiance to that sovereign. Now, a sovereign, by definition, is a lawmaker, and allegiance is obedience to. You owe your obedience to your sovereign. You owe your worship to your God. Now, a sovereign is a lawmaker. God is a lawmaker. The state of Texas is a lawmaker. Germany and France are both lawmakers. There are people that belong to those political societies. Now, the creator of the universe made an observation one time. He said, no man can serve two masters because he's going to hold to the one and hate the other or vice versa. Now, most governments subscribe to that principle of law. They do not allow you to be a citizen of two countries at the same time. That's almost akin to being double-minded. Now, there are some countries that don't care. Egypt's one of them. You could be a citizen of 15 countries, they couldn't care less. Here in the United States, they allow limited dual citizenship, such as Israel and the United States. Maybe even you Canadians. I don't know, somebody was telling me the other day that Canada had a reciprocal agreement with the United States. That's news to me, and I kind of don't believe it, but, you know, maybe there's something new happened here that I don't know about. But as a general rule, though, the United States would not recognize your citizenship from any other country. You're either a Yankee or you're not. Now make up your mind. Now that's the way that game is played. Now a citizen in the popular and appropriate sense of the term is one who by birth or naturalization becomes a member of an independent political society called a state, kingdom, or empire, and as such is subject to its laws and entitled to its protection in all his rights incident to that relation. So you are subject to its laws. So, you know, we were talking about income tax the other day. Gerald N. Lysiak is a chiropractor. He has a license. He's subject to all the laws that come down as it's incident to that license. Income tax is one of them. I'm not opposed to the income tax. A lot of times people say, well, that guy Gordon is a tax protester. That's BS. I'm not protesting any tax. None? Zero? Now, it is true I don't pay a lot of taxes, and I know my local prosecutor here, he's really bummed out. His name's Tom Klein. Nice guy. Well, Tom is. Tom is a very likable man. I like Tom Klein. You know, as a person, he's just a hell of a nice guy. But Tom has it in for me because I don't pay income tax. And he's just really bummed out. In fact, if he had his druthers, he'd throw me in the penitentiary for the rest of my life. You know, the next 3 months and 16 days, whatever I got left, because of that income tax thing over there. Now, I don't know if anybody has ever told Tom, I don't draw Social Security. That's true. See, here I am, 70 years old. I don't draw Social Security. I'm not drawing any benefits from the government. I avoid government benefits like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I'm not entitled to these benefits. I'm an expatriate. We'll talk about that a little later. Member citizenship now is membership in a political society. What if you didn't want to be a member of that political society? Well, then you expatriate. That's all. No big mystery about it. It's covered in Title 8, Section 1481 of the U.S. Code. Anybody in America that wants to expatriate his U.S. citizenship can do it in a heartbeat. Seven ways that you can do that. Am I advocating that people expatriate? Not at all. I don't know if that's good for you or not. How in the hell do I know what's good for you? But as an instructor, see, I'm just here to tell you this is the way the law works. And I get letters and people talk, and they talk about citizenship, and I listen to their banter. And then I sit here and I say, no, I don't think that guy really understands citizenship. I don't think he understands reciprocity. I'm not sure that this guy knows what the hell he's talking about. I don't want to contradict people and tell them, hey, I think you're full of BS here, but you know that's the bottom line. Bottom line. And, you know, you're entitled to your opinion, and I'm not sitting here telling you that my opinion's better than yours or something like that. But I'm telling you this. You walk into court with some of these preposterous arguments that you people have out there and you want to go in there and argue income tax and tell them I'm not a citizen and you can't tax me. Hell, that's been going on for the last 25 or 30 years and all those people go to jail. If jail is where you want to end up, you know, I'll get after it. You know, I don't care. It's nothing to me, but these people, they don't want to go to jail. They don't want to pay their income tax. They want to have income. They want to be citizens. They want to draw unemployment and Social Security and all the goodies and benefits. They don't want to be responsible for their actions. In short, most people want to practice anarchy and be blessed in the pursuit. And I just don't know how to do that. So I don't tell people that, you know, this is Gordon's anarchy school and you can come here and learn how to break all the laws. I have a very simple principle here for income tax. If you don't want to pay the income tax, stop having income. I should ask Tom Klein that. I should say, Tom, if I don't have any income, would you be mad at me? I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. When people offer it to me, I tell them no thank you. If somebody offered me, you know, a marijuana joint, I'd say no thank you. I wouldn't call the sheriff and turn him in for smoking dope, but I wouldn't join him. I don't want to participate with him. All right, now, we see what membership in a political society is called. It's called citizenship. And the opposite to that then has to be what? Well, it's being an alien. All right, so if you were an alien, well, then would you be a citizen of some place? So when we look up citizenship, we find out there's no such thing as a non-citizen. Everybody is a citizen of some place on planet Earth. Why is that so? Because that's what the Law of Nations calls for, and it was in force and effect a long time before I ever came along on the scene. And that's the way the judge is going to construe it. And you'll get that from Bouvier's Law Dictionary. Take a look here at the word citizen and expatriation. There's another term in here called denizen. I want to zero in on this denizen story here for you because that's what I am. I was born in California, and I'm living in Missouri. The guy says, well, then you're a citizen of the United States. It's true, I was. And then I expatriated my citizenship. There's seven ways to do that, and under Title 8, Section 1481, I elected three of those modalities, executed them. And now I'm practicing a different law, still living here in the United States. Don't have a green card. Don't have a green card. Now, I haven't left the United States, and there's a modality for that. Now, normal people, when they expatriate, they pack their bags and they move to Chile. They establish residence in Chile, then they apply for citizenship in Chile, and after a term of years, they take some tests and they become a citizen of Chile, which expatriates their citizenship with the United States, and then they live in Chile and live their lives and do their thing. Now, 209 countries in the world, and people leave countries and move to other countries and become citizens of those countries. Now, while everybody has a right to leave the country that they were born in, they do not have a right to go to some other country. If you're a citizen, let's say of Australia, and you decide you've had it with Australia and you want to move to New Zealand, you can get on an airplane, go to New Zealand, but that doesn't mean that the New Zealanders have to accept you into their club. The New Zealanders have a club. It's called the New Zealand Club. The Australians have a club. The Chinese have a club. The Japanese, the Americans, the Canadians, everybody in the world has their club. Now, if you're born in that club, well, then you're a citizen of that club, whether you like it or not. If you want to expatriate your citizenship, you can do that. But that does not mean that some other club has some duty to receive you. They can if they want to, but they don't have to. Now, generally speaking, if an American wants to leave the United States, expatriate, and move to Canada, Australia, or New Zealand, those countries will generally accept them. And I remember one time I moved up to Canada. I bought a piece of ground up there. The Canadians were not adverse to selling land to Americans. Took my money. And then I made application for citizenship and residency up there. And then after a while, I changed my mind and came back to the United States. But at that time, in the early 1960s, the Canadians were just tickled to death to see me come up there. Now, Canadians leave Canada and come down here to the United States. We have many, many Canadians that come through school here. Most of them have come from Canada to the United States. And most of them aren't citizens of the United States. They're still citizens of Canada. They just live here. They just moved down here, and they've been living here for 20, 30, 40 years. They'll probably die here. As far as I can tell, the American authorities have never complained too much about you Canadians. And I don't know about the Canadian authorities complaining about Americans or you Australians or New Zealanders, but as a general rule, I think that we can just about move interchangeably around without too much problem. So if you apply for citizenship, you know, you're an Australian, you come here to the United States, say, I want to be a citizen, I think they'd probably take you right in. And I don't know that they would or wouldn't, but I'm just pointing out to you that we have pretty, you know, pretty liberal immigration laws. Now, there's a third guy that comes into the equation here. He's called a denizen. Now, if you're from Australia and you come to the United States, we call you an alien. So you're a citizen of Australia, an alien in the United States. But there's a third category of person here, which is called a denizen. And I never hear anybody talk about these people. I don't hear the INS, and I don't hear Senator Boxer or Dianne Feinstein. They talk about immigration policy. They talk about Mexicans coming across the border. They talk about amnesty and all kinds of things here concerning citizenship and alienage, but I never hear them talk much about denizenship or denizens. So in Anglo-Saxon administration, we have a class of people over here which are called denizens. And in Old English common law, denizens had no political rights. They could not vote, and they could not hold public office. So, by mutuality, they also owed no citizen-like capitation tax to the crown. And although denizens had occupancy jurisdiction to stay within a kingdom, the only taxes that the crown was able to get out of them was limited to the extent that the denizen participated in commerce. Commerce. Now, in our Constitution, we have a clause in here called the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. When Congress makes a law, they always make that law, to some degree or another, commensurate with the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. Buckling your seatbelt is a commerce statute. Driving on the right side of the road is a commerce statute. Insuring your automobile is a commerce statute. Using credit cards and Federal Reserve notes, those are acts and indicia of commerce, trade, commerce, business, and industry, which affects some public interest. Now, notice here that this denizen has no political rights. He doesn't vote, doesn't hold public office, isn't entitled to any benefits, doesn't participate in commerce. And the only time the king gets anything out of him is when he goes down to the store and buys something and then pays a sales tax. Or if he goes out and gets licensed or does something that brings him into some commercial venue for which there's some excise tax too. Now, in the last two programs, I pointed that out. Geraldine Lysiak has a license to practice chiropractic. And as a result of that, he owes a lot of taxes. He's a citizen of the United States. He's not a denizen. He's not an alien. And so, as a result of that, there's some connecting links that he's got that I don't have. He's got some baggage that he's carrying around. And I took a look at that years ago, and I said, you know, I don't think I want that baggage. I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to be locked up for tax evasion. But I don't want to pay the tax, so what do? Well, did it ever occur to anybody that if the government wants to tax your income, then just theoretically, what if we didn't have any income? Would you owe any income tax? No, the government wants to tax your property. Well, it's just for the sake of our discussion here. Let's suppose I didn't have any property. Well, then would I owe any property tax? Now, oftentimes people want to muddy the water, and they'll write me or call me, and they'll say, well, how in the hell are you going to live without property and without income? That's totally collateral to our discussion. Not here to argue with you. I'm just here to tell you, if I didn't have any income, would I owe any income tax? Tom, you listening? Now, since 1978, I have successfully avoided income. Now, here in the United States, we're allowed a minimum amount of income before you have to file a tax return. As I speak, the last time I got a number, it was $8,900. Last year, it was $8,200, I believe it was, or $8,400. Then they raised it to $8,900. I remember a few years back, it was $6,800. And going on back, when I first started out as a taxpayer, it was $600. If you earned $600 a year, you had to file a tax return. If you earned under $600 a year, you didn't have to file one. And they've continually raised that. Today, as I speak, it's about $8,900. All right, so let's suppose that we went out and we were doing our thing, we're living our lives, and we have less than $8,900 in income. Do we owe a tax return? The answer is no. See how simple that is? Well, I can't live on $8,900 a year. Well, okay. I'm not here to argue with you. I'm just saying you could starve to death on $8,800 a year, but you wouldn't owe any income tax. Now, that's all I wanted to bring out, is that if you don't have any income or you have income below the filing minimum, you don't have a tax return to file and you don't have a tax to pay. Now, if you were a denizen instead of a citizen, there would be different consequences for you. If you're an alien, you got different consequences than the consequences of being a citizen. And if you're a denizen, it's something different than being an alien and being a citizen. That's all I'm pointing out. So one day I took a look at this as a legal matter, and I said, would it be of benefit to me to become an alien? Should I leave and go to Canada? Should I become a Canadian and then come back to the United States with Canadian citizenship? Would that be of any benefit? Should I expatriate my citizenship and go to Canada, fail to get Canadian citizenship, and then come back to the United States without any formal citizenship from either side? Would that be of any benefit? Should I expatriate my citizenship, stay here, and become a denizen? Would that have any benefit? So I took a look at these, and I came to a conclusion. So I'm going to take a break right here and tell you what the bottom line is concerning our program, and then let's take a look at this thing of denizen, and let's see whether or not it's got anything for you, any benefits. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. We need to keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine, and they're mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right. We're back here talking about denizens. If I don't lose my voice here, hang on a minute. A denizen, in Old English common law, is something different than a citizen and something different than an alien. You can only tax them as they participate in commerce. And generally, James Kettner, in a publication called The Development of American Citizenship between 1608 and 1870, published by the University of North Carolina Press, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 1976. So what you're looking for here is The Development of American Citizenship. And that's between 1608 and 1870. Published by the University of North Carolina Press, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Now, that I'm aware of, the word denizen appears 21 times in the U.S. Supreme Court between 1952 in a case by the name of On Lee versus United States, which is cited at 343 U.S. 747. And in 1812, so between 1812 now and 1952, you'll find that denizen appears in the U.S. Supreme Court reports 21 times. And it's mentioned in 1812 in Fairfax Devise versus Hunter's Leasee, cited at 11 U.S. 603. Here's another example. This word denizen is used. It's mentioned in a case called Ledecky versus Watkins, cited at 333 U.S. 160, back in 1947. And in the context of a quotation from Title 50, Section 21 of the Enemy Alien Act, Black's Fifth, in their kind of middle state between an alien and a natural-born subject, and participates in the status of both of these. So if you take a look at Black's Dictionary, 5th edition, it's in a kind of a middle state between an alien and a natural-born subject, and he participates of the status of both of these. Now, there's a little bit more to be said in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, while we're talking about a denizen here. A denizen is an alien born who has obtained letters patent to make him an English subject. He is intermediate between a natural-born subject and an alien. He may take lands by purchase or device. He may be an alien cannot. Let me repeat that again. A denizen may take lands by purchase or device, but an alien cannot do that. Now, for instance, here in Missouri, our legislature has protected our lands here, and an Arabian, for instance, let's take the Saudi Arabia, an Arabian who comes over here to the United States and wants to buy land as an alien can't do that here in Missouri. He has to have a front man. He has to establish a corporation. He can do that. It's an alien corporation. And then that corporation can buy and hold land. Or he can use some other DBA or a front. There's other modalities for doing that. But just to come over here and buy and hold, he can't do that. Not all states do that. but this one does. Now, there's a little difference here in a denizen. A denizen now can buy and hold land here. A citizen can buy and hold land. Doesn't mean he can own it, just means he can buy it and hold it. We'll talk about this ownership here a little later. But just for your information, so that you can, you know, start to get some understanding here, because, see, a lot of you people out there, you come in here and you talk about citizenship, and you're talking about your 14th Amendment citizenship, and your natural citizenship, and your state citizenship, and, you know, just on and on. There's just all these opinions and ideas concerning citizenship. Then I got to ask, you know, well, are you really sure that you want to have state of Oregon citizenship or state of Texas citizenship or United States citizenship or German citizenship? I mean, I'm not here to tell you should or shouldn't. I'm just here, are you really sure that's what you want? It's an old adage that says, you know, be careful of what you ask for because you might get it. Now remember that citizens owe their allegiance to their sovereign. Now, you know, the collection of taxes now is incident to your allegiance to your sovereign. So when you sit here and say, I'm a citizen of the United States of America, then you're a United States of America taxpayer. I don't know if you're aware of that, but there's a case called Rachel Templeton versus United States, decided back in the 1980s, in which the Seventh Circuit made that observation. Templeton never disputed that she was a citizen of the United States. She disputed that she was a taxpayer. And the court said that's frivolous on its face. Every citizen is a taxpayer, period. That's the end of the report. So when you say, I'm a citizen of the United States, well, then you're a taxpayer of the United States. So don't raise the issue, then, that I'm not a taxpayer. Now, I did that. See, I'm not a taxpayer, and I don't pay income tax. But as I said earlier, I don't have any income. That solves your problem right there. Somebody's going to say, well, how do you live? And the answer is, I live very well. Thank you. Very well. There was life in this country before income tax. There is life in this country right now with income tax. And there will be life in this country after the income tax. Life is not commensurate. Life is not dependent upon income tax. I don't believe it for a minute. Now, I wouldn't tell you that you ought not to pay income tax. That's a choice for you to make. You know, I had a guy here one time. He used to fly airplanes for Northwest Orient Airlines, and he was making $130,000 a year 20 or 30 years ago. And when he left class, he said, I'm going to go back, shut my mouth, pay my taxes, and keep flying in the left seat. And he said, I do not want to give up my citizenship. I do not want to give up my job at the airline. I now understand that I'm a taxpayer, I'm a citizen, and I owe the tax, and I'm going to go back and pay it. Well, good for him. He came here not paying his taxes, believing that he didn't owe them, that they were some kind of a voluntary thingy, and that he wasn't a citizen of the United States. How in the hell did you get a license to fly commercial airplanes with Northwest Orient Airlines as a citizen of some other jurisdiction? You know, when you come in here and you say, well, I'm not a citizen, well, then what in the hell are you? You know, you think you're a thingy from Mars? Come on, let's get intelligent here. Now, in Black's Law Dictionary, Denison, 5th edition, West Publishing in St. Paul, adds that an American judicial definition of denizen has changed somewhat from its historical English counterpart. What denizen means today is the same that it has always meant. Our laws give certain privileges or benefits, and they withhold certain privileges and benefits from our adopted subjects. And we may naturally conclude that there may be some qualification of the privilege in the laws of other countries. But our resident denizens are entitled, as I take it, to all sorts of commercial privileges which our natural-born subjects can claim. Okay, let's pause right there. Let's suppose that you're a Navajo Indian. Now, you're born in the nation of Navajo. and you never leave the Indian reservation, which is preserved by treaty. You never exercise the 1924 statute on citizenship. Now, let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, you're now 30 years old and you decide to go down to Shiprock, New Mexico, and have a couple of drinks down at the Ivanhoe Bar. So you leave the reservation. You go into Shiprock. You're sitting at the bar. And you're having a couple of drinks. Along comes an INS agent, and he says, "Hey, I don't think I've seen you around here for a while, son. Produce some identification. I want to know, you know, what's your citizenship?" And so you look at him, and you say, "Well, I was born up the road here about 40 miles on the Navajo Reservation in a little mud hut, and I've been living there for the last 30 years. I don't have a social security number. I don't have any identification. I have never spent a day in public school. What in the hell are you?" "Well, it's pretty obvious you're not a citizen. You don't have a birth certificate. Never been registered." "Now, are you an alien then?" "Well, no, you were born here in the United States. I mean, you're born within in the country. So what are you?" "Well, you have a status, and that's a denizen. That's what you are. Now, your government does not want any denizens out there. That's why you never heard this word before in your life. This is just totally strange to all you people listening. Your government wants you to be a citizen or an alien, one or the other. Just like you go into court, the judge wants you to plead guilty or not guilty. He does not want you to sit there and plead non-assumpsit by way of confession or avoidance or double jeopardy or anything else. He's got a routine here, see? And if you come in here and you plead guilty or not guilty, we know exactly how to deal with you. You walk in the door and say, 'I want to plead non-assumpsit,' the judge rolls his eyes and says, 'Oh, my God, we don't accept pleas like that.' Well, then why'd you ask?" A judge did that one time. He said, "Mr. Gordon, how do you plead?" And I said, "I plead non-assumpsit by way of confession and avoidance." He said, "You can't plea that way." And I said, "Well, if I can't plea that way, then why did you ask me how I wanted to plea?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to plead you not guilty." And I said, "Well, are you representing me?" He said, "No." I said, "Well, then I object. I don't want you representing me, and I don't want you pleading for me. Now, you asked me plainly. And I told you plainly. If you didn't want to know, why did you ask?" And the judge rolled his eyes like, "Oh my God, what is this guy?" Then they clear the courtroom and then they deal with you individually. They don't want you people out there to hear what goes on behind closed doors with people that walk in and make an affirmative pleading, for crying out loud. Slaves are not supposed to know they're slaves. We don't run around telling the slaves that they're slaves. We tell those people they're free. Live in the freest country in the world. It's what we tell them in Russia. It's what we tell them in China. It's what we tell them here in the United States. You people are all free, white, 21, and by God, you're living in the freest country in the world. Just make sure you plead guilty or not guilty and get a professional license so that you can collect taxes for us. Now, I don't want to collect taxes for the United States government, and I don't want to pay the United States government any tax. How do you like that? I don't want any benefits from the United States government. I don't want unemployment insurance. I don't want Social Security. I don't want submarines parading around the world defending me from a bunch of terrorists. Just leave me alone. Let the terrorists get at me if they can get here. I'm not sure those terrorists have enough money to get here. Now, let's take a look here at Marriott versus Wilson. That's a British case in 1799. Denizens do not enjoy political franchise rights, nor can they hold elective government office, but they do hold occupancy jurisdiction, and they do enjoy commercial benefits created by the state, and so denizens were only taxed to the extent that they participated in commerce. So here you are, a Navajo Indian, you walk off the reservation, you walk into the bar in Shiprock, you put your money on the counter, and you're going to get taxed. How? Well, they're going to tax that bar. That bar is a licensed entity. The people that use that bar are citizens of the United States. They've got licenses, social security numbers, birth certificates. They owe reciprocity. And so they charge the price of the tax in the price of the drink. That's why you pay $2, $3, $4 for a drink. Not because the whiskey costs that much. It's because there's taxes on them. So when you participate in commerce, you get to participate in taxes. And so I pay taxes. I buy a gallon of gas and I pay 42 cents in tax. It's like everybody else. Now, back before the Civil War days, blacks in America, these are black people now in America, were not citizens of the United States because only white people could be citizens before the Reconstruction Amendments made their appearance. Now, an attorney general once spoke on how colored persons are not aliens and they are not citizens, but yet they are something. But what are they? They are, or they were, denizens. Because denizens hold occupancy jurisdiction. They're born here. But they do not enjoy any juristic benefits originating from the United States of a political nature. Now remember, citizenship has a political benefit. Remember that term? We just read it to you. Membership in a political society is called citizenship, and it implies a duty of allegiance on the part of the member and a duty of protection on the part of the society. These are reciprocal obligations, one being a compensation for the other. The term citizen refers to a constituent member of a body politic owing allegiance to that sovereign. So the guy that owns the bar there in Shiprock, he's a citizen. He owes his allegiance to his sovereign. His sovereign makes the laws. And one of the laws is you got to pay us taxes on all of the liquor that you sell. We're going to give you a liquor license. We're going to give you a monopoly here. Now, Mr. Denison, Mr. Navajo Indian, do you believe that you can go across the street and open up a competing bar and start selling whiskey over there? Because if you do, I think you're going to be surprised. Very surprised. You're going to have people coming over there raising hell with you. They're going to grab you. They're going to throw irons on you. They're going to beat you up. They're going to remove you from that corner. You, Mr. Denison, cannot compete out here in this monopoly marketplace with that bar across the street. He has a monopoly there. He's a citizen. He's a constituent member of this monopoly. So let's wake up here and smell the coffee. Now, it isn't necessary, in my view of the matter, to discuss the question as to how far a free man of color, meaning a black man who was not a slave, may be a citizen in the highest sense of the word, that is, one who enjoys in the fullest manner all of the juris civitas under the Constitution of the United States. Now, free people of color are not aliens. They enjoy universally, while there's been no express statutable provision to the contrary, the rights of denizens. How far a political status may be acquired is a different question. But his civil status is that of complete denizenship. So in 1840, a free black who is not a slave now, sir, is he a citizen? No. Is he an alien? No. What is he? He's a denizen. Does he have any political rights? No. Can he hold elective office? No. Is he a slave? No. Is he indentured? No. He's a common law freeman. Were there such people in 1840? Not many, but a few. Are there very many of those in 2009? Not many, but a few. There are a few people here in America that are common law freemen. They express total denizenship. So I took a look at that years back, and I said, you know, that kind of appeals to me. I think maybe I might want to give up the citizenship, give up my licenses, my bonds, and my privilege, and maybe just exercise rights independently of political franchise. I know it's a wild new concept for most of you, but there it is. And finally, here in the United States in 1985, when this article was written, persons participating in that closed private domain of King's commerce without enjoying any political benefits pay the same identical taxes as those who do enjoy political benefits. There is no economy now associated with being a denizen while you're pursuing commercial enrichment today. The economy long sought after by tax protesters will be realized only by effectuating a total and pure severance of themselves away from adhesive attachments of King's equity jurisdiction, which consists of having accepted either commercial benefits or of the political benefits derived from the operation of citizenship. Now, what people do here when they have children, they get a birth certificate for them to establish and enroll them in citizenship in the United States. Then they get them a social security number so that they can be enrolled in commerce. Then, as this child grows up, he turns 18, he's always had a birth certificate, he's always had a social security number. He's a citizen of the United States. He pledges allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. He wants to join the army and go kill people in the name of America. God love him, get after it. But he now owes taxes, and he owes obedience and allegiance to his master, his sovereign, the United States government. And, you know, when the United States government enacts laws, you know, like gun control legislation, and they enact driver's license legislation, and taxes that they want to collect, you know, and so on down the line, well, then those people have to participate. And then, to add a little insult to injury, they send you off to college, and they give you a professional license. And then remember, they teach you to think that you can think. There's not very many people in America that can think. Those people are pretty much, you know, in the elite levels, such as the Bank for International Settlements. People like Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer and Ted Kennedy and Barack Obama, those are called insiders. They can think. They're pretty knowledgeable people. That's that one half of 1% at the top of the pyramid. And then there's about 5 or 6% that are paid professionals who think that they can think. And then there's the rest of us down here, the other 94%. We not only can't think, we don't even think that we can think. We just pay our taxes and shut up. We just enroll in the Army, the Navy, and the Marines, and they use us like cannon fodder, and they use us up like a used Kotex. So for most of us, nothing's new. Well, there's the story on denizens. Now, next time we'll take a look here at some more of these stories. You know, people want to ask me about stories. Let's take a story here like citizenship. Let's take a look at citizenship next time, and let's see some more of this thing of citizenship, and then do you really want to be a citizen? Meanwhile, back on the farm here, let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.